Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Red and White Authority brought to you by Labatt Blue. I'm Daniela Bruce alongside Art Regner, and we're going to bring our guest right in today because we're going to do a season recap and give you some thoughts on the Red Wings year this year. And to do that with us, the TV voice of your Detroit Red Wings, Ken Daniels, is joining us. Ken, thank you so much. I know that you're probably trying to relax a little bit after that whirlwind at the end of the season, but we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Daniela, Art, I'd love to be with you guys working every night. So, you know,
great
relaxation. I got all summer.
Yeah, I think we all would like to still be working just a little bit, just a little longer this year. But let's start right there, Ken. There were obviously some shortcomings this year. I know everybody really wanted this team to find themselves in a playoff spot. But how would you describe the season? In what ways was it a positive and a season of growing for you? And what, in your mind, how was it maybe a shortcoming in certain ways, if you think that?
Well, the shortcoming was a disappointment because the way it was set up was, you know, I mean, 8 points up February 29th. Mm-hmm. You'd think you're probably in, but you never know. You just had to go 500 the rest of the way to get in. And sure enough, March hit and it wasn't good. So that's a disappointment. But again, and we say it often, and yes, I know, but if you said in October, and I think we said in October, maybe right here, that you'd hopefully be playing meaningful games at the trade deadline to give them pause going forward. And the Red Wings did that. And so to that end, I think it's a success overall.
I wanted to ask you, I asked Steve this last week, and I finally got Steve to admit that they should have won more games than that losing streak. I mean, you know, I knew that it was upsetting to him, but I mean, does that mean that they're further away than we thought, that 8-point lead was just an aberration?
Well, no, I don't think it was an aberration. I think it depends on how you look at it. Your most valuable player goes down, and I think that can put to rest how valuable Dylan Larkin is, and overall in the National Hockey League.
Right.
You can, you know, there was many questions of Dylan Larkin, a 1A or a 1B. What is Dylan Larkin? Well, on this team, he's clearly a number one and their most valuable player. I think it speaks to the depth behind them, and they knew that. And JT Compher is very serviceable, a career-high 19 goals. But would JT Compher be best served as your third-line center? Probably. So where's the elite talent in number two hole? And that's hard to find. Maybe that's a Nate Danielson down the road. Maybe that's a Marco Kasper. They're trying to build there. But within the rebuild, Steve did the stopgap measure, signing Compher, and when he signed Kopp the year previous to try to outdo the ahead in the rebuild that Ottawa and Buffalo were, and to that end this season, he succeeded in that end. You know, there was that stopgap measure, and it nearly got the Red Wings into the playoffs, but when Dylan Larkin goes down and you have elite wingers like you do have, whether it be Raymond, DeBrincat, or Kane, you can see that the line driver isn't there when Dylan's out, and that just speaks to the lack of elite offensive talent in behind Dylan, but that's hard to find.
Yeah, so we know that's a hole that you would like to fill, right? And as you mentioned, it might be from within the system, or maybe it's somebody that gets brought in during the offseason. I think this is going to be a big offseason, but you mentioned some of the talented wingers, and let's start with Lucas Raymond, because I don't want to say Dylan being injured was a good thing for anybody, because it wasn't. But during that time period, it felt like Lucas Raymond really added another level to his game, knowing that he had to make up for the loss of the captain and the loss of Dylan Larkin during that time. And then when Dylan came back, that only continued. What were your impressions of Lucas Raymond this year?
I guess simply to say that you see, and few wingers can do that. I think as it goes along, I'm not saying he's elite in that regard, like Patrick Kane can be. Patrick Kane is a winger when healthy, and we saw that he can drive a line on his own. I think Lucas Raymond can do that. Mm-hmm. Lucas Raymond can drive a line, and it's only going to get better. I think Lucas Raymond has more on the defensive acumen than a guy like Patrick Kane might have. And that will get better too at 21 years old. I mean, my goodness, when he's putting up and next season, now the expectations there, he's going to get better than 80 points. He could be. He could be a point per game player. And I can only imagine, you know, if you have more depth down the middle, it doesn't allow teams to shut down a Lucas Raymond where they're concentrating on a Dylan Larkin. If you've got a number two center that can also help drive a line along with Lucas Raymond, that only expands what he can do. So Lucas Raymond showed elite talent. This guy is going to be a star, an elite star, as he moves along in this league.
He was always considered, even his draft year, as one of the top players. I mean, I can remember going to the summer showcase and you know, he and Lafreniere were the two players that everybody came out to see. You talked about the stopgap measure, and if we look at the Red Wings right now and what Steve has to do this offseason, he finally brought up shades of his days at Tampa. The cap might come into play here pretty soon, especially with Seider and Raymond going to be signed to extensions. But David Perron, Patrick Kane, Daniel Sprong, Christian Fisher, Shane Gaspierre, and James Reimer are unrestricted free agents. Steve's expressed interest in retaining all of them, but realistically, that just can't happen. Who do you see coming back in that group?
No, realistically, it can happen. Well, certainly, Gaspierre is a luxury on the back end and what he does for the power play. Depending on price, but there are so many lefties and so many lefties who are locked in. I don't know how he could possibly bring them all back. Gaspierre, I'd like to see back. But again, the Red Wings got fortunate this year without many injuries on the back end. Right. So they were fortunate in that regard. But there is a logjam there with contracts on the left side. I personally would love to see Patrick Kane back. I don't know. He wants term. I'm sure he'd want a three-year deal. And I don't think at his age and history, whether Steve would be into doing that. That remains to be seen. Perron on the right deal. I don't see Daniel Sprong coming back. I just don't. And then by the same token, Art, and Daniela, as we spoke of, where Steve said he'd like to retain all of them, you've also got to make room for an Albert Johansson and Jonathan Berggren, who are out of waivers. So how do you possibly do all that? I don't know. I would think there would be a trade coming at some point, either to move a contract to make some of that happen. But that's why I think this offseason is going to be fascinating.
You know, I think you mentioned Christian Fisher, but he's right. The one that to me, it's interesting because I really liked him. I enjoyed covering his personality. He was great to talk to. And I think he was really well liked in the locker room. And then what he brought on the ice, that line of him, Andrew Kopp and Michael Rasmussen, was the toughest checking line, quote unquote, that we've seen in a few years from this Red Wings team. Do you think he has potential to come back?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so. I Christian Fisher, loved in the room and loved on the ice for what he brings. What was he this year? 1.2 or something like that. You could give him some type of raise, but I don't think any team's going to overpay for Christian Fisher. And he likes it here. The guys like him. I would hope Christian Fisher would be one of those guys who does return for sure. Yeah.
You mentioned Johansson and Berggren. I think just through, and maybe Steve actually would like to see this. I'm not sure. I can't speak for him. But the Red Wings appear that they're going to be a younger club next year. Does that mean when people hear younger, they think that might be growing pains, that might be a step back? Or do you think that they'll be able to maintain at least a 90-point level?
90-point level, yeah, but it's probably going to take 95 or 96 to get in. Me personally, I think it comes down to goaltending. Can get you that, depending what they do in goal. Can maybe get you those five more wins, depending who it is. But it would take a lot to maybe get those elite goaltenders that are out there. If Calgary were to move a Jacob Markstrom, a Linus Allmark, they've got Swayman in Boston. Does he interest the Red Wings? I don't know. But you can also get that in goal to get you more wins rather than rejigging the entire roster. But to do that, you're going to have to move some players out of your roster to try to get that, whether it be prospects coming. So that's why I say this year is going to be fascinating. I think they will be younger. I think they're going to have to be. But if some of those guys that we talked about who may move on, yeah, younger players are going to probably replace them. So, yeah, I think they'll be younger, but not a lot younger, but I think they'll be younger.
Okay, quick follow-up for maybe all three of us to talk about is Sebastian Kosa. And trust me, I don't think he's going to be here next year, so I don't want fans to get that idea from this conversation. But the steps that he's been able to take in his game have been promising, right? Now he's going to go on this playoff run with Grand Rapids. So he doesn't look to be that far away in my mind, but I don't think it's going to be next year. What'd you think of Kosa this year, and how far away do you think he is?
Fantastic. I think he's a year away.
Yeah.
And maybe if there are injuries, I can't see what the cap situation, the Red Wings carrying three goaltenders again.
Right.
And that could prove to be a problem midway through. And we not that Kosa coming up would be a problem. But, you know, you may get some NHL time this year just by circumstance. But what he did this year and confidence-wise and the things that he had to work on, five hole, big goaltender, things like that that he is working on. I think he's a year away. I mean, Steve said that too, so it's not some big revelation on our part here. When Steve thinks he's a year away, and that's why, again, it's Husso, it's Lyon for now, or is it? And are you getting a stopgap for a year and maybe another year, and then Kosa's your backup in another year from now? Perfect. And then, you know, Trey Augustine's probably still realistically 4 years away. So it's a long time. You don't want to rush him, and goaltenders take longer than most.
Well, Trey, if you're listening, I think you should leave state right away and start that pro career, all right?
Do you hate Michigan State that much? No. Let him have another year. Oh, God.
Actually, I like Trey a lot. I mean, I couldn't agree. I agree with you. I think Kosa might get a cup of coffee in Detroit next year, depending on injury situation. He's a definitive number one, I would assume, in Grand Rapids. I think Carter Guylander, and don't sleep on him either. I mean, I remember when the Red Wings drafted him. They were pretty high on him. I believe he will be the number one goaltender in Toledo. So if you look at it that way, Trey Augustine at State, Kosa number one in GR, and then you have Guylander, Carter, over there in Grand Rapids. There seems to be, which was really a big question mark, there seems to be good young depth at goaltending finally.
Well, there is, and that's the big question for this year. Both Lyon, and Lyon you can always re-sign in a serviceable backup. Is he a number one? No, but it's a very serviceable backup and well-liked. I love Alex. But this is the big question with Ville Husso going into the final year of his contract. Yes, he's under contract, but you're not also expecting a year after Sebastian Kosa to be your number one. Mm-hmm. Somebody's got to play there. So who is it? That's why, to me, goaltending is the biggest question. You can go into next year with Husso and Lyon, and what are you doing beyond that, and who is out there? And they obviously know that very well. And Kosa, two seasons from now, ready to go. Is he ready to go for 30 games, 20 games, 40 games? I don't know. But that's where I think you still have to look that year out to get some stabilization back there.
I agree with you. I think there's no doubt about it. I can't see him being the number one goaltender 2 years from now. As much as I like the doctor, and he's really come a long way, I just don't. I see him being a backup and maybe winning the net his first year in Detroit, depending on how he plays and whomever his partner is. But you're right. I don't think... I'm sure this keeps Steve up at night. I don't know. I'm sure goaltending has been the thorn in his side since he's got here in Detroit, just trying to get it right, because he's really tried. And, you know, and look what Ned did in Pittsburgh.
Yes, and he was great. Whether he's back in Pittsburgh, I don't know. But what stood out to me from both Derek and from Steve in the end of season conferences that they had was defensive play. And not just the systems, but the minutiae, the small details in the game, and getting everyone to play defensive hockey, whether it be the forwards or the defensemen who are back there. And I think a lot of that can be covered up by great goaltending, but you also want to get in a better defensive structure. So to me, going through in this offseason, that has to be in their mind. If you lose Kane and you lose Sprong, you're losing close to 40 goals there. So how do you make that up? Better defensive play is part of that end goal. And if you don't have Goss to spare, there's 50 points. So how do you move in that end? And maybe a guy like Jonathan Bergeron can make up some of that. Can he be a 20-goal scorer in the National Hockey League? Absolutely. But again, does he fit into where the defensive structure has to come? They said it many times. There has to be a better defensive structure. Does that speak to just goaltending? No, it's a part of it, but it speaks to all-around team play.
Well, it's interesting, too. We're talking about the offseason. There are some free agents available this year at the end of the season. And it is going to be fascinating, honestly, because if the team doesn't bring back Patrick Kane because of money and term, who else would they be willing to bring in at this point? Is there a trade that could happen at some point to bring somebody else in? But some of the big names like Sam Reinhart is out there, and he's going to be a free agent, but he'll probably cost a pretty penny. So can something like that happen? Or Steven Stamkos, his name gets thrown out there just because of the relationship he has with Steve Yzerman, right? But again,
and they have same first name.
Yes, I think that's probably why Steve would
be
here.
There's a reason.
But Steve spells Steven differently.
No, he would actually say, listen, if you're going to come to Detroit, I'm the only Steve that can be here. You're going to have to change your name.
And I want you to change your spelling. Not that's V-E-N. It's P-H, all right? That's how you spell Steven.
But just some other big names. Elias Lindholm's
out
there.
Can he keep the same number? Can he keep the same number? That's what I want to know. Can Stamkos keep the same number? So, yes, and there's Jake Guentzel. Yeah. Obviously, Brian Rust is under contract in Pittsburgh. I personally love Dakota Joshua, and I've said it all season long, and he's from Dearborn. His mom, right. Julie, plays hockey still. What a great story. I love Dakota Joshua. I think he gives you that toughness and that grind that you love, and he had a great first game for Vancouver. Can the Canucks afford him with what they have to do? And Philip Peronic, a contract that Steve knew he'd have to pay, and that's why he unloaded Philip Peronic in the deal. And we'll see how Axel Sandin Pellick will be just fine a couple of years from now. But that's the questions that Vancouver has now. So can they afford Dakota Joshua? Does Dakota Joshua even want to leave? Not that he's a top six guy, but boy, on a third line role, I think he'd be a terrific presence. So yeah, and the names that you mentioned for sure, but they are becoming a cap team, and depending what is done with both Sider and Raymond, they probably have $10 or $11 million remaining to sign eight players. Not a lot of money. So that's why I believe in the Iser plan. I know what they're thinking, or I don't know what they're thinking, but whatever they do, I trust it. So again, it'll be fascinating to watch this summer.
Well, you know, okay. Well, just that scenario you just painted, I'm starting to feel not as confident going into next season. But all right, with players, all right, let me ask you this then, Kenny. Do you see prospects not named Edvinson, Johansson, or Berggren make a push to be on Detroit's roster? Marco Kasper, Nate Danielson, who's playing very well for Portland right now, Carter Mazur, perhaps Cross Hannes might do something, Sundin Pellikka, depending on who you speak with, but Steve says he's in Sweden another year. Some guy's saying, I think he might be in North America next year. You see anybody making a push, I guess?
Well, future behavior, you just look to past behavior, and I'm not going to Ken Holland overripe, but Steve doesn't rush prospects. Right. If they're ready to play in the National Hockey, we saw Nate Danielson in the preseason. It was terrific last season. If he does that again, is he going to put him in there, and who's he supplanting in the lineup? Do you start him at wing, where ultimately Rasmussen wound up? We saw some of Joe Valeno at that. Where is the room down the middle? You'd probably start him at wing. But I just think it comes to a numbers game. And if the wing positions are filled and you still have Jonathan Berggren come next October on this team, where is the room for a Nate Danielson? Unless you're moving Valeno to ring, where's the room for Marco Kasper? I think Kasper, to me, only because he has that year in Grand Rapids. And again, past behavior. He's seen that. He started to come. It took him a little while, but he had a nice finish to the season, hopefully carrying on for Kasper. I just don't see a Danielson taking the spot of somebody else when he hasn't even had time in the American Hockey League yet. I'd find it surprising, but if he pushes at camp and says, no, I'm the guy. Steve Yzerman did that too when he came into the National Hockey League. No, I'm the guy. I'm not going anywhere. Okay, maybe Nate Danielson does the same thing. It can happen.
Again, all very fascinating scenarios. It's going to be a really exciting offseason, and then leading into training camp is going to be really fun too this year. But right now, we're all enjoying some Stanley Cup playoff hockey, which burns a little bit this year just because we wish it was our Red Wings playing in it. But what series has kind of captured your attention so far? I know it's early, but
besides the Leafs.
Yeah. Aside from the Leafs.
You know, let me be honest, sorry. I'm from Toronto, and I spoke to Mickey this morning, you know, and he's rooting for the Maple Leafs. Me, I just sort of root for the chaos because I love listening to Toronto just heat themselves up, you know, whether they win, then they're nervous, and then they lose. Oh, it's over. I just love listening to that stuff. It's fascinating for me. So I really don't care either way who wins that series, honestly. If Toronto does great, if Boston does great. I love the comeback last night by Carolina when they made it 3-1. I said, oh, they're coming now. And what they did was fascinating for me. But Dallas was my cup pick, either Dallas or Edmonton. So Dallas, Vegas, and Mark Stone coming back and scoring the goal. Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah.
Oh, hard to believe. Shocking. Anyway, so that one, I think Dallas was my pick to go, or Edmonton out of the West, and it was Carolina in the East. So those would be my – obviously, you look at Florida and Tampa, and fantastic. Would I love to see Tampa force to a Game 7 in that one? I sure would, because I think that would be really something. But Carolina was my pick in the East, and I'm torn between Dallas and Edmonton in the West.
Yeah, I'm rooting for – I mean, Ken, you know, both teams we know quite well because of who's running them, but I just would love to see Jim Neal win a cup. I really would.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would too. And Ottinger has, you know, had that poor half a season, then he really came on, and I'm thinking – okay, I hope you're Ottinger last half of the season and not the first half. Otherwise, they'd be in trouble. But they're deep enough. They got good offense. They play a structured game. I really like Dallas's depth. But now that you get Mark Stone back in Vegas, you know, they were just maybe sleeping and hitting at the right time.
Can Steve get on the phone with them and maybe figure out how they've worked their cap? I think we might be getting to that point. We can be...
You just have to rupture some spleens. It'll all work out. You know what's going to happen, though, because the next CBA in a couple of years, when they're going to change that now, yeah. Just when the Red Wings are ready to push and they're going to need the LTIR space, they'll change all that rule now. You have to have cap compliance on your roster for the 23-man roster for the playoffs, too, or the 20 skaters, 18 skaters, whatever they decide to do. They will change that rule, guaranteed. And Ken Holland had said that all along, by the way, that you maybe have to be cap compliant for your roster in the playoffs, too. That just went under the radar, and they didn't really think about it at the time when they did the CBA. Since then, that's been his solution, and I can almost guarantee when the next CBA is done, because it's collectively bargained, that will happen. There'll be a change to the roster.
I just want to know, Mo and Lucas, eight-year deals or bridge deals?
You think he has the exact answers?
No, I mean that.
Don't you wish you knew what Steve was thinking, Art?
I think he's thinking Mo 8, definitely. And Lucas, Lucas has made him kind of rethink things, I think.
I think Lucas, maybe. But Mo, I think that's an interesting question only because of this. What do you view as Mo's ceiling offensively? Is he a 70-point defenseman with better players around him and maybe Simon Evanson as a defense partner? So is Mo's ceiling to go from 50 points to 70, or is he what he is, a stud defensively, a shot blocker, a hitter, and what he is in 50 points of the ceiling? Or if you bridge him and all of a sudden 2 years from now, he goes to 70 points a season and now you're looking at even more. To me, that's the only question.
Yeah, it's like you got to get out your crystal ball a little bit. But we were actually just talking about this the other day, that I think when Mo is not taking on the toughest minutes in the entire NHL, his offense will it'll grow a little bit. He will be more than 50 points a year or whatever it is. So it's that's another thing that I don't envy, having to figure out those contracts.
He's a smart player, has a high hockey IQ. Whatever he needs to work on, he works on, he perfects it. I think when you bring Simon into the mix, Axel Pellikup, I think Johansson could be a great player. They have a lot of young defensemen. I think that he will definitely blossom into a 70-point player. I know, and he's running the first power play unit. So I really do think that if I were Steve, and I do tell him a lot of times what to do, and he never listens to me, but I would definitely, without question, sign Mo Sider for 8 years, and I think Mo would do it.
Okay, and I'm not saying that's wrong either. It'll be interesting to see the Dylan Larkin benchmark at 8.7. Although, as I joke with Dylan all the time, and you know, I said it, why didn't he sign for 8.71, just his number? However, 8.7 is the number. That'll be an interesting number to watch going forward, and who exceeds that if either of those two do on an eight-year deal.
All right, Ken, we'll end this with some fun, because you and Mickey definitely had some fun throughout the year, especially that last stretch of games. It was just so much fun to listen to your calls, the true excitement that you guys bring to the broadcast all the time. You're considered some of the best in the NHL, some of the best in all of sports, actually. But why do you and Mickey work so well together? Why is it such a dynamic duo, the two of you?
That's a good question, and thank you for those kind words. We had a lot of fun down the stretch. I think Mickey and I, again, I talk to him almost every day. It's just we get along, and we are two very different people, as you know, from Carhartt on down and on the tractor in the backyard. I'm much more organized than he is, but he rely on some of that for me. And 27 years together, and it took a first couple of years because it was a lot different. Where I came from Hockey Night in Canada, and he has that background too, where I was used to play-by-play being 80% and 20% color comes in on the whistle. That has changed now as I listen to other broadcasters and analysts who talk a lot. You know the great Bob Cole, right, who Mickey Definitely. And I both work with. I was hosting Hockey Night when Bob was doing play-by-play, and I loved him. I still think he's one of the greatest voices, along with Doc Emmerich and Dan Kelly, mm-hmm. to ever grace this game. And Mickey and I were in the cabin, Tampa. We were in the playoffs with the Lightning. So this is how long ago it was. I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, whatever it was. And we took a cab and dropped Bob off at his hotel, and we're talking about analysts. And Bob says, you know, those guys between the benches, the analysts today, Mickey, do they ever shut up? And it was funny because we both laughed because we're used to Bob doing 80%, don't talk over play. And that was me the first 2 years, I think, with Mickey. I had to adjust to that. And now I love it. We just try not to get too sidetracked where we go. But I think the game is about storytelling. We go into game telling stories and have fun and entertain. And I think outside of this year, previous years, we knew we had that because you can deflect, because the team wasn't bringing necessarily the excitement, certainly not down the stretch. To us, every game is hockey passion, and we don't care. Every game is a great game, and we love the game and don't get in the way of the game. So you sort of had to sidetrack a little bit. This year, not so much, and then just the passion takes over. But I think we've just learned each other cadence outside the past 2 years, and you just play off one another and have fun. And we smile every game, and we hope that comes across to the viewers.
You know, I've always told you this. What I love about you is you let the game come to you. You don't manufacture anything. And that's why this question I've always wanted to ask you, do you have a favorite call? Because I don't see you, knowing that a milestone is going to be hit or something, scripting out what you're going to say. I think it comes from the passion and the heart and the knowledge that you have for this game. But is there one call particularly that stands out for you?
I guess the Kane one in Chicago this year.
That was a good one.
It got so much play, and basically from the Shepmates or the Australian twins who mimicked our call, you know, mouthing at what we did. I think that was pretty funny. And all I can do when I hear that call now is I think of those two knuckleheads doing it. But I'm very thankful that they did, and it was funny, and we loved it. So I think the Patrick Kane one, because in my heart of hearts, I love Patrick. And I loved him since he first met my son, Jamie, back at Joe Louis Arena. And we took a picture together. And I've just always had a fondness for Patrick. So that will go down for me as probably my favorite. But there were so many of Pavel Datsyuk and scoring in Dallas and the breakaway on the feed from Brett Hull and put that in your highlight reel bank. I remember that one. So Pavel and Kane, I love the greats of the game. And even from my Hockey Night days, there were many from I don't know, Mario Lemieux passing the rocket and goals, called that one in Montreal. So different ones like that. But I just wait for the moment, Art, and hope for the next one. But those are some of my favorite. You know what? And one of mine, and for some reason sticks out, is Steve Yzerman against the Los Angeles Kings. And opening night, it was Joe Louis Arena, and he scored with 2 seconds left to win the game. Why that one? I don't know. It's those that you just sort of anticipate, better hurry. Zetterberg scoring one like that when I said, better hurry, and he does. So it's just like when you see the time and they happen as you sort of predict that they will, is always fascinating.
Well, at the end of this Red Wings season, even the final game of the year, David Perron scoring with 3 seconds left, it felt like you always had to be on your toes. Did you start to get that? Not that you aren't most times, but just knowing, okay, there's 7 seconds left, but hey, we might score a goal here. This team has proven that it might happen.
That one to me was shocking.
Yeah.
Tell you the truth.
Right.
Oh, you could hear it on my voice. And I remember because Mickey looked down at me because we were in the gondola at the Bell Center, a great spot to watch a game, as great as LCA is. That Montreal gondola is fantastic. When he scored it, I hit the floor. I hit the floor on my knees, and Mickey looked down at me, and that's when I said, wow. I mean, I couldn't believe it. So that one to me, Danielle, honestly, was shocking. I didn't think it. And part of me also, I'm going, the Washington Capitals are going to score in an empty net. I mean, we said it all along before the game started. We talked about it in our open. We just somehow knew Washington would score in the friggin' empty net. So I knew when their game, because we had it on, and Mickey and I were actually looking at two games at the same time. We had the Washington game right in front of us. I knew it was 1-1 and Perron scored. So as much as I was, wow, oh my goodness, let's hope, still in my heart, I'm going, this isn't going to end well. As excited as I was in the moment, I just thought Washington, you know. And then we go to break, and this is how close it was, just so you know. Perron scores with 3 and 4 left. You know, the faceoff was 7.7, a great faceoff win, and you know, Perron scores. We go to break, and I still see 1-1, and then Zach Zollers, our fantastic stats guy with Bally Sports Detroit, says in my ear about 45 seconds into the break, and it's a 90-second commercial timeout, Washington just scored in the empty net. And we were so deflated at that moment. We just knew it was coming. So literally, from the time Perron scored and the time we went to break, it was 1 minute of joys. 1 minute of joyfulness. That's all we had.
It's so funny you say that, because I was actually down near the locker room watching with Trevor, and he got the same update in his ear. And I was like, man, Trev, you couldn't have just let me have like more than 45 seconds of pure joy.
I wish it were. And you know what? Even if there weren't the delay in Philadelphia, had the goal called back, so they delayed in that game, maybe if we were ahead more and they would have known where we were, Philadelphia, it was a 4 to 5 minute delay on a goal that Kelly Sutherland blew. I hate going on referees. You know that. I love the refs. But he's in the corner and the whistle goes and the puck was in the net and it would have been 1-0 for the Flyers. The goal gets called back. They review all that. Now there's a delay on that. Had they not had that delay, perhaps they would have known where we were, and Torts would have known, okay, the Red Wings got their point already. We don't pull our goaltender and maybe they win it. So just the circumstance, the way it happened. But you know what? The march did in Detroit, and you know, you made that bet. Unfortunately, in the end, that's what came to cost. You shouldn't have to rely on that, but they did. You're still hoping, but it didn't happen.
Do you like Utah Blizzard? That's the favorite.
Well, it's going to be Utah Hockey Club for this year, because I think they're just going Utah Hockey Club like Washington did
football team,
in football. Yeah. So I think that's what it's going to be, because they want to get it right. I don't know. Utah's fine. They're going to go back to Arizona at some point under a different owner. Mark this podcast down right now. It'll be under a different owner. They're going back to Arizona. It won't be the same owner, and it might be 4 or 5 years when an arena's built, but they're going back to Arizona. So Utah now, good for them. They got great ownership there. I think it'll be wonderful, and I hope we go back to Arizona at some point. They do deserve it. It was just unfortunate circumstances there, an arena always in a wrong spot, and then an arena that was just too darn small. So they'll get back there and they'll do it right under different ownership.
Well, we appreciate your time today, Ken. And I do have one more for you, because we always love to talk about the Jamie Daniels Foundation and what's coming up on the horizon with that. So let us know, what do you got on the calendar for Jamie Daniels Foundation? And Art wanted to make sure we asked, Art, do you plan to roast Steve Yzerman?
Celebrity roast Steve Yzerman.
Well, can you be my agent and work on that, Art, for me?
I will try.
If you'd like to, sure.
I will bug him relentlessly.
At some point in time, that would be wonderful. I'll tell you, I did, before we roasted and toasted Lidstrom and Holmstrom, and you know which one was roasted, I had asked Brendan Shanahan. I had asked Brendan Shanahan twice now, and he said no. And the last time I asked him, he said, Kenny, no, he attended Mickey's and was great and donates and whatever, which is wonderful. And I'd love to roast you, Brendan. He said, no. He said, you know what? Why don't you wait till I've accomplished something? And I said, if I have to wait till you win a cup in Toronto, that's never going to happen. And he said, my point exactly. So anyway, joking, because you know Brendan, right? Yeah. So he'd love to win a cup in Toronto, but waiting for me to accomplish something. I'd love to roast Steve. I don't think he'll ever go for it. But if you want to work on that for down the road, Art, what we're working on now for either December or January of this year is a breakfast revolving around baseball. Nothing sure yet, but it's going to be fantastic. I've reached out to some high-profile baseball folks. So that is what we're looking at. Beautiful breakfast. Like we've done before, we did hot stove stories with Mickey and Ken. We had the referees there, Wes McCauley and Dan O'Halloran and Chris Draper and Chris Osgood. It was fantastic. So we're going to go back to doing a breakfast. You will get more updates as I have them. I'm not being coy about this. I really don't have it all set yet. We have to wait till the Red Wings schedule comes out to be sure that I'm home and we find a morning in December, January, where all these baseball guys that I'm looking at getting are also doing football and basketball too. But I think to hear their stories and the questions people would have for them, and we're going to go local flavor too, it's going to be fantastic. So we just have to wait till it's in order, but I'll let you guys know for sure.
Well, we love that. They're always very exciting events and the roasts are great. And I'm going to make sure Art does work on Steve for you, because I don't know, for some reason, please. I feel like he might be able to make that happen.
I don't know about that, but you can give it a year or so. We're still good, because you know why? because my daughter's getting married, and Danielle, you know all about that.
Yes.
My daughter's getting married June of next year, so there won't be a roast next summer because we have other things to plan, and it's all going to be about her as it should be. So there won't be something next summer. So we're going to do the breakfast to offset that, but we will get back to the roast. You got a couple of years to work on Steve for.
Another big shout out to Ken Daniels for joining the Red and White Authority this week. Art, you have some homework. Getting Steve Yzerman to join the roast.
I guarantee you Steve will commit to doing it on the day Ken's daughter gets married.
Yeah, next summer when Ken can't
do
it.
I'm sorry, Ken. That's the only time. Day I have. You know?
Well, maybe when he's not the general manager of the Red Wings anymore, he'll do it.
Yeah, I think that'll be...
I mean, we got some time, but...
Ken will be a grandfather by then.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Several times over.
We hope at least, right? That's what we all hope for.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it was great to hear from Ken. A lot to say about the season. Art, one thing that we didn't really talk about that I want to make sure we touch on before we close out the podcast is the playoff run that the Grand Rapids Griffins are going to be on, which is going to be super exciting. I know you're planning to head to Grand Rapids for some of those games, but high-end prospects playing in big moments. This is huge for the Red Wings organization.
Well, it certainly is in the... Rockford Ice Hogs. I'm not sure what an ice hog is. If someone knows, please let me know. But the Ice Hogs and the Griffins are both very, very close in the standings. It came down to the last game of the year, and Grand Rapids beat them out for second by a point. They play the best 3 of 5 in the first round, so Grand Rapids has home ice. But these teams played the 12 times in the regular season, and each one was a pretty... close game, and it didn't matter where they were playing at. Rockford won in GR, GR won in Rockford, so I'm looking forward to it. I think Sebastian's going to have a good run. Simon is a beast down there, and, you know, Carter Mazur, as I said, and, you know, Marco Casper and Emil Vero and Albert Johansson. I mean, it is full of Red Wing prospects. If you have the time, and Grand Rapids isn't very far, I suggest you go.
It's going to be great. Like I said, very important minutes, important moments for some of the Red Wings' highest end prospects. So very, very cool to see.
Dan Watson is an outstanding coach.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. Oh, I did just look this up. According to Canada.ca, so I think this is legit.
Uh-oh.
What an ice hog is.
Oh,
that's a legend. It says a mysterious winter creature. These amazing creatures are related to groundhogs, but they are much, much larger. There's like a whole legend thing here, a very long story that you can read. Mysterious winter creatures.
Well, that's kind of what a griffin is too, right? It's a mythological beast.
I think so. It asked you if you believe. It has the whole story on here, Canada.ca. Google it.
All right. It's like the New Jersey
Devil. I don't know
devil.
If this is legit or not, honestly, but seems legit.
Yeah, you know, for the time being, it sounds good.
I hope we beat the Ice Hogs, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Griffins are better than Ice Hogs in my mind.
And then I think they go to the Milwaukee Admirals, who were first in the division.
Don't they have to play?
If they beat the Ice Hogs, I think that next up would be the Admirals.
Just predicting that they're going to win?
The Admirals are going to smoke whomever it is.
All right. Yep. I kind of hope they don't now, just so I can replay this soundbite.
Well, go ahead. I mean, hey, I'm not a big Admirals fan, although, you know, they changed their logo. It used to be like an Admiral, which wasn't really menacing. Now it's a skull in an Admiral's hat.
That's much more menacing.
Yes.
I approve of
that. It has nothing
to
do with hockey, I don't think, but
that's
still.
Okay. Doesn't always have to.
Okay.
Especially in the AHL. Have some fun with it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's fun in GR. Go down there.
Maybe they should wear their flying toaster uniforms.
Those are the best.
They're awesome.
They definitely are the best.
I love that. Okay. Well, a lot of exciting things coming up. We talked about how big of an offseason it will be for the Red Wings, and Stanley Cup playoffs are happening now. Griffin's going to be playing for the Calder Cup. It's exciting times, even though the Red Wings aren't playing.
Don't sleep on the Walleye, because they are a phenomenal club down there, too. So, and that's a very good environment to go. You know, they should do day-night things in Toledo. Go to a Walleye game, and they go see the Mudhens.
I think they do something like that.
I think once in a while they do.
You're a marketing genius, Art.
They have a nice little sports complex down in Toledo. Great, great environment to go in.
All right. Now that I called you a marketing genius, why don't
Thank
you tell
you.
Us a little bit about Labatt Blue?
It is the official Canadian beer of the Detroit Red Wings. As you know, whether it's winter, spring, summer, or fall, when the day is over and you're home and you're ready to watch playoff hockey or Real Housewives of Atlanta or whatever, whatever Daniela watches. What better way to cap off your day with a nice, cold, frothy Labatt Blue? But we do ask that you drink our premium beer responsibly.
My guilty pleasure reality TV show is The Kardashians, by the way. It is not Real Housewives. I don't know what's worse, though, so you don't have to comment on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a badge of honor.
I'm just letting you know, if you're going to insult my reality TV, at least make it accurate, okay?
Okay, no, I'm writing that down. I'll never forget.
Don't forget. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Red and White Authority. We'll see you next time.